listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Rob Daly. Champions confirmed this week in Spain, Belgium, Portugal and Turkey. As many of Europe's major leagues are coming to an end, we discuss all the week's major talking points, and European football journalist Andy Brassel will be along too to talk about Barcelona and Benfica's title wins and a memorable goodbye for Zlatan Ibrahimovic in Paris. Gonzalo Higuain breaks an ancient Serie A goal-scoring record in style. Chris Parrott is back on the show. Chris, welcome back.
Thank you. You can see my tan from my trip to Indonesia.
Yes, you bought all the Factor 50 in the whole country, I imagine, did you?
Yeah, and I think it's whiter than your wall, actually. My skin, but yeah.
Did you crash a moped? In Indonesia, what happened?
A defined crash, don't you? But they
defined crash.
No, they have a drink called Joss, which basically, if you take out the caffeine and turned Red Bull into sherbet.
Right, so it's like powdery stuff.
It's like a powdery stuff, and you have that. Pretty potent stuff. I wouldn't advise it. That's probably why it's illegal in this country. But yeah, it was very fun. Not too much football because it's the middle of the night, but they were showing Liverpool, LFC TV.
Were they?
Yeah.
I suppose so. They got a big following out there.
I think so. I mean, football's very popular, but there wasn't too much of it on TV, apart from actually the Bundesliga. 3 days late. So, I mean, you can watch the Bundesliga, but whether you can really, I don't know, it's quite difficult
to keep across it,
yeah.
Well, luckily, we can do that job for you on the show because we're going to talk about
exactly.
The Bundesliga in a moment.
Which is why I went round with a Football in Europe flag. Said, oi, guys.
The big skull and crossbones on it. England squad, Chris, let's start with that, eh? Because it's been a bone of contention on
yes.
The podcast. And you said that they should take Andy Carroll. And he's picked Marcus Rashford in the 26-man squad.
He has. Well, you know my feelings on Carroll. I think he should have been in it. I'm pleased Rashford's there because three players have to be dropped from it. You know, we have to say that first of all. 31st of May, is it, when they're going to announce the final?
Three games between now. I mean, yeah. Someone could easily get injured in that time.
Absolutely. First of all, yeah, someone normally does get injured, let's be honest.
Yeah.
I think because of the first game, which is Sunday, United players won't be playing. They're in the Cup. Mm. Liverpool players might not be playing because they're in the Europa League on Wednesday. So there's more of an opportunity to look at more players. I get it. We're very close to the tournament. Rashford's been thrilling. I've seen him a lot this season in the under-19s live and then in the first team live for United. And I think he deserves his chance. I would imagine he'll be one of the three that's dropped if they were all fit. But I think him training will be very interesting to see how he goes, and he'll keep everyone on their toes.
Who do you think is going to? I think he will be one of the three dropped.
And
I haven't got a problem with him being named in the squad over Jermaine Defoe. I don't have too much of a problem with it either way.
No.
But do you think the three to go are him, Townsend and Delph, if everyone stays fit?
I would hope so.
I wonder if he's going to take Townsend because he's worried about width. He hasn't got Welbeck and he's not taking Walcott.
Yeah.
And he's got, so we've got Sterling and then you've got Milner who can do a job out there.
I would hope that it is Delph. I say hope, if Rashford is outstanding and scores, I'd have no problem with Rashford going. I think it will be Rashford and Delph, and then I think it will be one more. If it's Danny Drinkwater, I'll support Wales in the tournament because it should be, he should be, for me, nailed ahead of Henderson, ahead of Wilshere at this current juncture.
Why is Delph in the squad? He played a bit in qualifying.
I'm not sure.
He's not had a...
We've got an awful lot of central midfielders. But, yeah. but maybe, you know...
Maybe he's waiting to see if Henderson and Wilshere can get through these
exactly.
friendlies.
Exactly. And are they how absolutely fit are they? Probably fine. And they've played, actually, a bit at the end of the season, which we didn't necessarily think they would. But, yeah, I think it's... I don't know. Normally, it's doom and gloom with England. I actually think there's some exciting players. And please, he's taken three centre-backs. He didn't need to take four.
You did that in your England squad. If people want to go back to our England squad podcast,
I just
you
think
did do that.
Dyer's die off of that protection, I think.
And Jagielka's not been very good, has he?
No.
Everton have been shipping goals.
They have. And you only need to pick 11 players, you know.
Mm.
You've got 23-man squad. A lot of them won't see action. But, you know, I don't know. So I think there's a lot of in-form young players. And why not be excited about England?
Yeah, absolutely. And France's squad isn't bad. They didn't even pick Lacazette or Hatem Ben Arfa, who's been the best player in France.
I know,
but they
I know.
Did pick Payet and Kante as well, N'Golo Kante.
And also Gignac, who...
And Gignac, yeah.
Who, I think there's a few, actually. We'll talk about a certain Mario Gomez later in the show, but a few players who have moved from their respective divisions and you kind of write them off in terms of their international hopes.
Mm.
But Gignac's playing in Mexico and he's in the France squad. Gomez may well be in the Germany squad. He's playing in Turkey. Maybe that's slightly changing. If you go somewhere and score that many goals, I just don't think you can
You can see the games now. I mean, even 20 years ago, maybe an international manager would have struggled to watch your games. Let's talk about the Russian Premier League very quickly, Chris, because we're going to date the podcast very fast if we talk about the Russian League too much, because CSKA and Rostov play now.
Yeah.
And as we're recording this, and Rostov can win the title. But we're going to talk about Zenit failing to defend their title this season. And Andre Villas-Boas bows out having won the cup, but no league title. And you commentated on them at the weekend.
Yeah, I mean
is Villas-Boas' reputation now... I've had mixed feelings about his whole time there. Because it was good to win the title last season, but at no point... Have you ever been excited by the way they play football?
No, I don't think Zenit have.
Fans haven't, I don't think.
I think they'll look back because he won the title and the cup. He did the minimum. The minimum is more than many might, actually. I don't think it's an easy place to manage. He did a Q&A before the game, which was interesting. Again, he reiterated he's heading for a sabbatical, which... You know, he's been linked with Porto and other jobs.
Hmm.
But it does look like he's taking a year off. He was also, again, very critical because the week before the season started in Russia, they changed the amount of foreign players that you could play. And
he was furious about it.
I mean, yeah. I mean, in fairness, though, a week before the season starts, it totally changes everything because you've signed the players to think, okay, we can have this many. And then one less means that you have to rotate. And all that comes of rotating players and keeping players happy, etc. He lost Rondon to West Brom because of that. He can see where he's coming from.
Well, Danny was the key one, wasn't it? Because so they could only play six foreigners, and the rule previously was seven. Is that right? I think, and five Russians in the team. And he kept having to... Danny's like one of his best players, but he'd have to put him on the bench, and then he'd come off the bench and score.
Yeah.
He scored like three goals in 30 minutes of football or something at the start of the season.
And then so it ends up who they signed, because they signed Zhirkov and Kokorin in order to...
Russian
players, so that then they could replace some of their lesser foreign players.
Exactly, yeah.
To keep their best players out. So all I mean is that Andre Villas-Boas' reign will not be seen as a massive success at Zenit. They didn't break the Champions League, despite how well they played this season in the group stage. But in his defence... He won the cup, he won the league, and I think you have a lot to contend with, more than in most European leagues.
So who's replacing him at Zenit?
Well,
because you told us that Russian media was very keen on Pellegrini going there from City.
Well, first of all, because of their draw, they're very unlikely, depending on how Rostov go and CSKA can win the league, just as we're recording this.
To qualify for the Champions League.
To qualify for the Champions League, it looks tough for Zenit, particularly if Rostov win this evening, Monday. And I think that impacts on who they might be able to get in. And so Michail Lucescu is the name now from Shakhtar. He's been there for donkey's years. He's won everything he can over a decade. I think he'd be a good fit. But also you wonder what it means for their players like Witsel in particular, who has been courted by many clubs for the whole year. But now they might not be in the Champions League anyway. All of a sudden, are those players going to want to... Play
Hulk.
For Zenit.
So Hulk. Hulk there, yeah.
You've got plenty of players who I think Garay, Lombards, maybe they're because they're playing Champions League football. And if Zenit aren't playing Champions League football, they'll struggle.
Very good point. Okay, at the Bundesliga the weekend, I commentated on Wolfsburg beating Stuttgart 3-1. And it was a game that saw Stuttgart relegated for the first time since 1975. Now, this is, you know, a huge... German football club. You know, this isn't some yo-yo team. This is an absolute colossus club. And I went there for the first time this season, and their stadium at the Mercedes-Benz Arena is astonishing. I mean, a really amazing ground. But they just plummeted. And I looked at the numbers, Chris, because they finished second bottom and get automatic relegation. With nine games to play, they needed to win two to survive. they went on a run where they got 2 points from those 9 games, and they've gone down. I mean, it's an amazing turnaround and a huge name from German football going down. Before the game, Chris, so Stuttgart, whatever happened, had to win at Wolfsburg, which they failed to do. Andre Schürrle scored a couple, actually, as well for Wolfsburg. But they had this song. A radio station released this song called The Miracle of Wolfsburg. They were predicting that they would be able to turn it around. Das Wunder von Wolfsburg.
What, before the game?
Before the game. That
and they
were gonna...
released it before the game?
Yeah, the radio station did. It was like a local... Do you want to hear a bit of it?
Yeah, but they shouldn't have released it before the game.
Okay, here it is. So, catchy. I mean, it's very European, isn't it? In a Eurovision week.
Yeah, I was going to say, it is quite Eurovision. Oh dear. Still very upbeat, and they got relegated.
I know. Yeah, so the video is great, though. We'll post that on our Twitter timeline. If you enjoy that, good.
Strong music taste.
Yeah, so it means that Werder Bremen got a late winner against Frankfurt, meaning that they survive, Werder Bremen survive, and Frankfurt go into the relegation playoff spot now. The guy who scored that goal was Chilaboji, who's the sort of forgotten signing, the mad... I mean, we still don't understand why Chelsea signed him at the start of the season.
It's probably best that we don't, to be quite honest.
Yeah, exactly. So, Frankfurt in a relegation playoff now with Nuremberg, and going to be very interesting. Because, I mean, Chris, they're another huge club, aren't they, Frankfurt?
Yeah, and I was going to say Nuremberg, though, have a history. But yeah, it's just come back to Stuttgart. They won the title 9 years ago.
2007,
I mean, big teams. But as we've seen across Europe now, it's, I think, more than ever, maybe, your history's irrelevant.
Yeah. Well, there was their last home game against Mainz when they lost. The fans wore like black masks, like that, you know, like the ultras came onto the pitch and it was terrifying. They were going up to the players and shouting at them, like pushing them in the chest. Kevin Groskowitz, who's been there 4 months, was crying. I didn't understand what that was about. But nonetheless, and Bayern celebrated their title triumph at the weekend. Gladbach were already effectively guaranteed fourth, and they go into the Champions League as well. Some transfers from Germany. Harvard Nordveit, who's been at Gladbach this season, playing mainly at centre-back, although he's traditionally a central midfielder, I think, more so. He goes to West Ham on a free transfer. With Joel Matip joining Liverpool from Schalke, they've signed Naldo from Wolfsburg.
I saw that.
Naldo was linked with United after his Champions League performances this season.
That would seem to be a... I wonder if that is the... I don't know... the start of a few players leaving Wolfsburg. They're not even in Europe, are they? You know, talked about Zenit and, you know, Draxler. I don't know. Maybe they'll keep them for another year.
I think they'll keep hold of Draxler because it's just only been a year.
I know, but you never
know who's going to come in, I suppose, do you, for him?
And what if Draxler does really well at Euro?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's true.
You can see how, particularly clubs like that, they really have to be in elite competition. 1 year maybe is okay, but as soon as it's like two or three, even with the money, surely that should be hard to attract players.
You wanted to talk about Mario Götze, you said. I mean, because the reports in Germany were that Ancelotti has told him that they don't need Mario Götze, which has got fans of Liverpool in particular excited. It's got fans of Dortmund angry at the idea of re-signing. But Dortmund said they're open to that idea, with Hummels going in the other direction.
Wasn't that disappointing?
Yeah, how do you feel about that? I mean, I talked about it with Kevin Hatchard on the last show.
Just, I don't know. I would have loved to see Mats Hummels in the Premier League. That's, you know, just being maybe a bit selfish. There's just something about, for the Bundesliga itself as well, consistently having the best players move from easily the second biggest team. You know, they're not moving from the sixth or seventh or a team that's at Dortmund. And if, you know, every year they just get their pockets picked.
Bayern have done this since the, you know...
since time began,
yeah,
I know.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I mean, it's a great signing for them, for sure. But I would have liked to see Hummels go somewhere else. Also, it was interesting to see Dembele go to Dortmund.
Yeah, he has been fantastic this season. The way he moves forward with the ball and scores goals... 18 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
So everyone's talking about Renato Sanchez, and we'll speak to Andy about Sanchez shortly on the show. But great, great bit of business from Dortmund. How did they pull that off? Because a lot of clubs were looking at Dembele.
I think everybody were. Well, apparently the owner, Francois Pinault, has shares in Dortmund as well.
Oh, the owner of Rennes.
Now, whether that had anything to do with it, who knows? We know that Mikko Vazorc is very good.
Yeah, the Dortmund sporting director.
Yeah. Loved his quote about can play with both feet, good at nutmegging and dribbling.
Oh, that's a good thing.
If ever there's a reason to sign someone.
Do you know who is good at nutmeg?
Signing nutmeg, six players.
Luis Suarez.
Luis Suarez is very good at nutmegging. He can, yeah.
Chris, what else is on the list for this start bit? I think we're there.
We are.
We're asking people, because I think we're going to do a team of the year next week, Chris, are we?
Yeah.
Something along those lines. So we were asking people for their player of the European season. It's very hard to pick one, but someone you've liked.
I'll probably pick like 12 players in my team.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Or you'll put Andy Carroll in or forget.
That's a good point.
Suarez or something. Because Suarez is the name that everyone's been sending in. Hmm. Ryan B has gone for Suarez. He says, even when Barca was struggling, he remained their biggest threat. Aiden says Luis Suarez. He's looked better than Messi and Neymar, which takes some doing. And he says Higuain gets a close second. Stephen Dawes says it has to be Suarez. Surely he has to win the Ballon d'Or as well. If he doesn't win it after the season he's had, he'll never win it. Outscoring Ronaldo and Messi, not to be taken lightly either. Keep your tweets coming to us at FIE Podcast. We want your suggestions for Player of the Year for next week's show, Player of the Season in Europe.
One that hasn't mentioned that much, Griezmann. If Atletico win the Champions League, then I would say it's him. Particularly if he scores again. He's been so good in the knockout stages. Yeah. And in Liga, what he scored 22 goals for a team who don't create nearly as many chances as Barcelona or even Napoli.
Well, no, we saw in Munich, they had one chance.
Yeah.
But until the late penalty that Torres had saved. Had one chance and he took it.
Yeah.
I mean, just absolutely brilliant. Another tweet in from Shardo Shiri says, this is about the England squad. A lot of people are saying Drinkwater should be cut. Surely he merits his place before Del Fulshit and Henderson. You basically said that.
Yeah, definitely.
You and Shardo. And the Shardmeister General are...
Well, and his, the same his surname Shearer. So maybe it's an alias.
Exactly. Okay, so leave us a review on iTunes as well. If you do enjoy the show, that really helps us in the podcast charts. Next up, let's hear from Andy Brassel.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
Joining us on the show now is European football journalist Andy Brassel. Andy, thanks for coming back on the show, mate.
My pleasure.
You're in a tricky situation this week, Andy, because on the same night of the Europa League final... FC Wimbledon are in a very important game of their own. How are you going to juggle this?
Oh, it's going to be tough. But fortunately, I say fortunately, I'm not going to be at the Europa League final one, unlike yourself. So I'll be able to do the two screen telly and iPad manoeuvre, which I mean, you know, it has to be. And it's not completely unheard of this time of season, is it? With a lot of serious games.
Are you going to be a nervous wreck? How are you when you watch Wimbledon? Are you?
I don't absorb it like sort of in a tactical or analytical sense at all. It's my time off football. I'm just get it forward, score a goal, sort of thing. So that's my true self coming out.
Well, best of luck for that in the week, Andy, anyway.
Thank you. We have
important matters to talk about. We're going to talk about Spain, Portugal and Ibrahimovic. Let's start with Spain and Barcelona wrapping up their title. And I mean, just a major performance from Luis Suarez, who continues to prove, Andy, that he is a player for the biggest of stages.
Yeah, that's right. And, of course, he needed to come through at that moment. 25 minutes in or whenever it was, because at that point Real Madrid were winning already and they were winning the virtual league. And Deportivo La Coruña showed absolutely no signs of putting up any resistance to Real Madrid in that first half. So for him to come through at the right time, and you know, Granada, despite sort of theoretically being full of joy at having saved their La Liga skins the previous week in winning a second string Sevilla side, it just set themselves not to be broken. Obviously, that meant the moment that they conceded the goal, they were stuck. But before then, you had Gerard Piqué going very close, but not a whole stack of chances for Barcelona. It took a really beautiful move that Suarez provided quite a simple finishing touch to crack Granada open. And from then on, it was okay. There was a little tremor, I think, for probably 5 or 10 minutes, because of course the players must have all known what was was going on. But once Barcelona opened the scoring, that was pretty much it. And I think if you went back a couple of weeks to when Barcelona recovered their form with that big win at Deportivo La Coruña, there was maybe a sense that all the big three might win out. And so Barcelona would win the league that way. And apart from Atleti's defeat to already relegated Levante, it kind of turned out that way.
Yeah, extraordinary end to the season. Real Madrid only missing out by a point, but on head-to-head they would have lost it as well with Barcelona going into that final day. But Barca deserved champions then for you, Andy. I mean, they lost five games this season, one more than Real Madrid, but 112 goals, only conceded 29. Just unbelievable numbers.
Yeah, and they made it hard for themselves with that mini wobble. But, I think Luis Enrique was saying afterwards, you can't call a season a failure in which we won the league. He said, I accept people's points of view, I accept people's criticisms, but I can't accept that our season's a failure. And I think the interesting thing is, comparatively, you look at the numbers with Zidane as well, he's had the best ever start statistically of any Real Madrid manager. And one that was trotted out by Marca on Monday, that if the league had started when Zidane took over, Real Madrid would have won it. Well, obviously that's highly selective.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, but it's interesting to me as well, like how that will pan out next season. You know, what sort of platform, if any, the Champions League final will give either Atletico or Real Madrid. If Atletico win it and Zidane keeps his job, it will be just a fascinating Liga next season, especially with the sense that Real Madrid in particular have to fill their boots a bit in the transfer window because they might have that registration ban.
Yeah.
I mean, the next, I suppose, like sort of 8 to 10 days are really going to be interesting in terms of how La Liga is going to turn out. And of course, I think it will have a bearing on what happens with Sevilla as well. You know, will Unai Emery definitely stay? Will he keep the squad together? Of course, there's talk that Eva Banega, who's a key piece for them, has already signed for Inter. So how they turn out next season as well will be interesting because, you know, potentially they could maybe not be the fourth challenger, but they could certainly create more of a degree of discomfort for the big three than they did this season. They should do with the players they've got on paper.
I mean, it was actually a tough weekend for the city of Madrid in general because I was watching because they separated the title race and the relegation battle into 2 days, didn't they, in La Liga? I find that interesting. And they played
at the last minute. Yeah.
At the last minute.
Not great for the fans.
No, it's not great for the fans still. So on Sunday, all the relegation matters got decided and Rayo Vallecano and Getafe went down. Are you sad to see Rayo go, Andy?
Yeah, I am. And one thing I really enjoyed today, an advert in one of the papers by the kit sponsor, Kelme, who said, we're prouder than ever to be the sponsor of Rayo Vallecano. And, you know, there was a great atmosphere, it seemed, at Vallecas. And, I think they're a club that a lot of neutrals love. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, there's a lot to be admired about them. It was great seeing Paco Jiménez say at the end, you know, this is I can't reproach the players. They've done everything they could have. They've given everything they've got. And in the end, it wasn't enough. But the crowd at Vallecas were pretty unhappy and seeing some quite unsavoury stuff about Marcelino, the Villarreal manager, for the fact, of course, that they lost the Sporting, forgetting that a compromised Villarreal side pretty much laid down at Vallecas not that long ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And Paco Jiménez has said he would sign a new contract right now if it was offered to him. Andy, let's go to Portugal, eh? So Benfica are champions. And I mean, you know, we were sort of looking at the league table. I think probably one of your early appearances on the show back in, say, September, October, it looked like that Jorge Jesus was going to run away with the title with Sporting.
Yeah, it looked like he'd taken the magic with him.
Yeah. So, I mean, great job from Rui Vitória. I mean, is he the hero of this story?
Well, he is. And I think even more so for Benfica fans from the fact that he's feuded constantly in an escalating fashion with Jorge Jesus as the season has gone on. And they had a few words like through the media at the end of the game as well. Jorge Jesus said, I create, others simply copy, which I thought was quite spectacularly ungracious.
But he can be, can't he? I mean, I remember press conferences earlier in the season. He's not a modest fellow.
No. It's fair to say that he's a hurricane of a coach. But I received stuff from people saying, "Oh, we've got to forget that. We can't forget that Sporting have had a good season as well." But unfortunately, I would say with what they've spent on getting him in as coach, because they have really pushed the boat out thanks to a Mozambican investor to get him in. You expect to win the league after putting out that amount of lolly on a coach, and especially as Porto haven't been very good this season, and Porto, on paper at least, had the best squad. I mean, that's the thing. When, as you were saying before, when we go back to like September, October, it's an extraordinary situation because Benfica would have been seen as the third favourites, despite being the champions, because you think one team has got the best coach and the other team's got the best players,
yeah,
and then you've got the champions.
Absolutely.
If you look at the players that have gone out the door at Benfica in the past two or three years, it is unbelievable. It is absolutely unbelievable what they've done. And, you know, you just look at, we were talking about the numbers before, Benfica's last 27 league games of the season, 25 wins, a draw and a loss. I mean, you know, you can't do anything.
That's unbelievable form.
Yeah. It's extraordinary. And Vitória has managed to up his sledging game with Jorge Jesus at the same time. And he got them to the quarterfinals of the Champions League, where Jesus always said, and, you know, taking nothing away from him as a coach, he always said, it's not possible to do your best in the league and Europe. And a lot of Benfica fans are quite put out by this because, of course, you know, the club's got real history and tradition. Benfica are what they are because of the European Cup. And for a coach, however charismatic and however good football he provides and however much money he makes to the club, to turn around and say, actually, it doesn't matter. I just want to protect my legacy and win the league.
Yeah.
And then his successor, his unheralded successor, who a lot of people thought was a step down, to come in and go, actually, this is how it's done. It's a major thing. And, you know, we can talk about George Jesus.
They won Atletico as well, didn't they? I mean, in the group stage.
Yeah, that's right. Which was an extraordinary result, which looked even better in retrospect. And also, the extra thing with George Jesus is that he could transform players and make money, like he did with Fabio Contrao, like he did with Nemanja Matic, that he made them into something and then sold them on, thereby making tens of millions for the club. Now, this season, the player who has played most, the outfield player in the Portuguese top division who's played most when you add together all the games and you include the big games and all the rest of it, 18-year-old Renato Sanches. And they've managed to knock him out for €35 million up front. So, you know, Jesus hasn't even got the drop on him on that sense. And, you know, now they're in a situation where Nico Gaitán, who, of course, is a hugely important player for them, you know, in this and every season, said at the end of the game, I'm not going anywhere. Well, I want to stay here. This is my club. And to create that sort of environment, you really have to take your hat off to Vitória. And you have to take your hat off to Luis Felipe Vieira, the president, for believing in him and saying that this is our guy and he can get us to compete in Europe as well.
Yeah, strong decisions, Benfica, this season that have paid off for them. And you mentioned there Renato Sanches, most exciting teenager in Europe for many people, Andy. Do you think he'll get much football at Bayern?
I think he will. He won't get 4,000 minutes next season, which he has had this season, which is absolutely unbelievable. And I was saying recently somewhere else that, you know, you think that there are no dead minutes in that. There's no bit where he's waiting on the wing to collect the ball or up front to collect the ball or the forward players.
Well, he's an engine, isn't he?
Getting on with it. Exactly. He's either bringing the ball forward or trying to get it back. And, you know, every one of those minutes is full of sweat. So I feel pretty confident that he'll play maybe 20 games next season. I mean, they know how good he is. The thing is, there's nothing that impresses the team like a young player coming to their stadium and absolutely smashing it. And that's what he did. And, you know, it's, as someone was pointing out to me the other week, Cristiano Ronaldo in that friendly against Manchester United for Sporting all those years back in 2003 that accelerated his transfer. Mm. It's Miralem Pjanic in 2008 when he was 17 and he played in a Coupe de France quarterfinal for Metz at Lyon and they couldn't get near him when they were the champions. Those are the moments that make the difference and make a big club think, you know, we have to have this guy. and that really is the moment, it seems, when Bayern really accelerated their interest.
Let's talk quickly about France. Lyon had effectively secured their Champions League second spot in France the week before, and they lost the weekend, but it didn't matter because of Monaco couldn't catch them mathematically. So Monaco have that dreaded third Champions League spot, as we've talked about in France before. But Ibra's farewell, Andy, took a lot of the headlines. PSG winning the title by 31 points in the end. And he's off, arrived as a king, left a legend. Was that it, I think, from memory his tweet?
Yeah, that's the one.
That's the one, yeah.
I particularly like the words of L'Équipe, actually, the morning after on the Sunday. How do you say too much in Swedish? Because it was ridiculously over the top. That they had got special dispensation from the league to stop the game after 10 minutes so everyone could stand and give him a standing ovation, you know, because of the number 10 and whatnot. And because there was nothing riding on the game, the Paris got a pass to do that. You had him coming off after he'd scored the two goals to beat Carlos Bianchi's season record of Ligue 1 goals for the club, taking him to 38 just in Ligue 1, and his kids came to get him from the pitch. There was Nasser Al-Khelaifi, the president, saying the next day on Swedish TV that he was going to name a stand after him.
Yeah, I saw that. But does this part come down to, Andy, and I think Manchester City have a similar issue, because I was there the final day of last season at City, and Frank Lampard got the most amazing send-off from the club. And I remember when even David Beckham played his final game in a PSG shirt, he got a wonderful reception. You know, is it because the club doesn't necessarily have icons like that in its backlog, that when they get someone, they're almost, I mean, you talked about it being over the top, they're almost overwhelmed and go too far with it?
Well, I know what you're getting at, and probably the current directorship maybe feel like that.
Yeah, I can't quite work out to say that, but
I know exactly what you mean. I think it's that idea would probably affront a lot of Paris Saint-Germain fans from the 80s and 90s. You know, think of stars Rai and Ginola, and you know, even. Jérôme Waugh to a certain point, but I just think he's almost being congratulated for taking Paris Saint-Germain to a wider audience. You may be able to compare him and Jérôme Waugh in a sporting sense, even loosely, because they've both been really good players for Paris Saint-Germain, but in terms of taking them up a level, I suppose, in terms of making them one of the very biggest clubs in Europe, he's had a huge hand in that. And the fact that he's made them so much more visible and led from the front, he's kind of made them an ogre, really. I think he's been quite important.
Andy, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, mate. Oh, where's Ibra going? You're probably sick of people asking that. Where do you think he's going to go?
Well, I've thought for a while it'll be MLS, but in France this weekend, they think that United are at the front of the queue. I would quite like to see that, to be fair.
Oh, I'd love it. Ibra in the Premier League, yes, please. Andy, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it, as always, mate, and I'll see you soon.
No problem.
For more, head to the website, footballineurope.co.uk.
Chris Parrott alongside me on Football in Europe. Chris, Gonzalo Higuain.
Yes.
Extraordinary achievement at the weekend. He has broken the Serie A goalscoring record for a single season, getting to 36.
Yeah, quite some feat. It stood for 66 years, which is incredible that it... Well, maybe not incredible that it stood that long, but it shows the magnitude of his goal-scoring feats. Scored a hat-trick in the last game of the season against Frosinone to do it. The winning one was an overhead kick. Gunnar Nordahl's record in the 49-50 season when football was very different. He must have been some player to have scored that many. But, I mean, Higuain, we've spoken about him a lot this season. He has been...
in a team that hasn't won the title.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. 36 goals he's finished with. Next best, 19, Dybala.
Wow.
I mean, that is... I mean, 17 goal difference, as you said, for a team that hasn't won the title. He's led them almost single-handedly to second and an automatic Champions League group stage berth, though, ahead of Roma in third. Reports this week, Napoli, well, they'd love to have him signing a new contract, but one would imagine that he's top of everybody's list this summer. Whether he is for sale...
what is he, 29 or something? I can't remember how old Higuain is. Or around that. Late 20s.
Late 20s, okay. He's been at Real Madrid, but you'd think, you know, a couple of seasons nowadays.
Well, you don't, for that type of money. Money, I mean, who knows what's going to happen this summer?
Yeah.
He might go absolutely mad.
Yeah, but I just, 28.
28, okay, yep.
That wasn't me looking on Wikipedia.
It was. Absolutely was. I mean, he's an extraordinary striker, and Napoli finished second, and they, as you mentioned, qualified for the Champions League. That third goal was insane, because he had to score a hat-trick, didn't he, in the final day to break the record.
He was playing against a good team in Frosinone. They now conceded 76 in a season, and that is a porous defence, to say the least. But yeah, as you said, he had to score a hat-trick, and he did, and he capped it in with that overhead kick.
It was an unbelievable goal.
Well played, Gonzalo.
Yes, indeed. Chris, who's in Europe then in Serie A next season? We know Juve are champions, so they're in the group stage of the Champions League.
They are. They won it by 9 points in the end. I mean, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Napoli finished second, just ahead of Roma, which means Napoli automatically go into the group stage. Roma have to qualify. Italian teams have had a dreadful record in the playoff rounds and the qualifying rounds of the Champions League recently. Inter fourth, Fiorentina fifth, those two into the Europa League. Mm-hmm. Sassuolo sixth, Milan seventh. Now, that's important because if Milan lose the Coppa Italia final, then Sassuolo would go into the Europa League, which would be a great achievement for them.
Because Juve would be the winners of that final.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's how it was at the top. And at the bottom, Hellas Verona relegated months ago. Frosinone and Carpi, little Carpi. Won on the final day. Palermo did too, though. So Carpi go down and Palermo survived by the skin
Very
of
fortunate
their teeth.
Palermo after 2 million managerial changes this season. Okay, let's... and Francesco Totti has been, the club have said, actually, they've offered him another year's contract. He did finish the season very strongly indeed, and you imagine it would be another bit part of him if he did stay. Chris, tell me about champions of Turkey. Beşiktaş have won it.
They have. They've won. They've beaten Fenerbahçe and Galatasaray and co. First title since 2009. We heard on the show from Elliot Rothwell, was it the other week?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Moved into their new stadium as well on the banks of the river. It's, good times to be a Beşiktaş fan. They won it, and Mario Gomez, mentioned him at the top of the show, absolutely phenomenal season, 26 goals in 33 games. I mean, he's 30. He was in Germany's squad for their last two friendlies. You've got to take someone like that to Euro.
Yeah, well, he's not big on strikers, is he?
No.
Yugi Love. We know
but
that.
He's not, and he's, well, I say, got away with it is an understatement. The world champions. And Kurtz has scored the goal as a false nine. But, if you're talking about options, someone scores that many goals. I mean, he's scored goals throughout his career, hasn't he?
Well, Premier League clubs might have a look. There is reports at the moment, Chris, in Germany, that Mario Gomez could go back, and teams like Wolfsburg... and maybe, I think even Schalke, but clubs that need a centre-forward next season are being linked with him as well. Quick one on Belgium. We had Mark Rodden on the show recently telling us about Belgium. Club Brugge have won the title, Club Brugge, if we're using the correct pronunciation, because they beat Anderlecht, their title rivals, 4-0 at the weekend. So it's a first title in 11 years. Michel Prudhomme has done a brilliant job. I saw a lot of Club Brugge last season, actually, covering the league, and they play really great football. They played the best football in the league, but didn't win it. People remember Ghent, who were in the Champions League, pit them to the title. So a wonderful achievement.
That's a long wait for Club Brugge.
Oh, it is. And I'll tell you what as well. So when they were 2-0 up, it looked like a Brugge fan threw a flare onto the pitch and they had to stop the game for 5 minutes. And I was speaking to Will Downing, who was commentating on the game at the weekend. He said that the situation could have been that the game could have been suspended and cancelled, and they would have been docked points. Oh. So imagine a Club Bruges fan.
Imagine being that fan.
You're just like, oh, no.
Can I have a left? No.
Can I have a left?
Get out of the city. But also, they've
get out the city.
They've won it with games to spare, haven't they? Which, given the nature of the league, which and the split, it almost always goes to the wire. So they've done even better to
amazing.
Win it this early.
Yeah, certainly. Chris, let's finish by talking about the Europa League final this week. So Liverpool against Sevilla. Jordan Henderson back at the weekend. Danny Ings made a brief cameo. I don't think they're saying Divock Origi's going to play, are they? I think he's still way off. So what do you think? Sevilla have been rotten away from home this season.
Yeah, they haven't won a game.
It's
incredible
amazing.
Domestically. In terms for the competition, first of all, it's things the final everybody wanted as soon as Liverpool...
Drawn with Dortmund.
Knocked Manchester United out and then B, knocked Dortmund out.
Yeah.
It's great. It's a massive game because, in this era of Champions League football, and I'm going to slightly contradict myself, but sport's about winning to me. And if Liverpool win it or Sevilla win it, it'll be a big night. It will go in their trophy cabinet. It's still a major European competition. Sevilla want to win it for a third time in a row, which is mad. Liverpool, if they win it, they'll join Sevilla as the most successful team in the competition. But, and I said I'm going to contradict myself, neither are in the Champions League next season.
Oh, here he is.
And whoever wins the game...
He's talking about qualify for the Champions League.
...will be in the group stage. That is an enormous carrot.
It is.
To go in the cup.
So who's going to win?
I think Liverpool will win. I think they've...
They're playing well at the moment, and he's been able to rest players well. He's chosen to rest... what would be his team in the league.
They've turned up in big games as well since Klopp's gone there.
Villarreal, Manchester United.
Dortmund. The two games against City.
Yeah.
They were absolutely fantastic. I think Coutinho and Firmino, I think they'll have too much for Sevilla. But I think it could be a really good game. And as Jurgen Klopp said, he is fantastic at semi-finals, not such... good at finals.
Yes, well, he's already lost one with Liverpool, of course, season. And Kevin Camero will be the focus for Sevilla, having, I don't know if he's got to 30 goals this season in all competitions, maybe close to that. But, I mean, considering they lost their best player in Carlos Bacca last summer, I mean, he's really stepped up because Camero was very much the backup striker.
It was great last season. Bacca would run teams into the ground, particularly in Europe, but did a few of their games. With about 80 minutes with the defence just exhausted, they bring on Gamero.
And he'd score.
He is a finisher. And and then he'd come on and score. And Bacca was like, well done. They were like a perfect double act, even though they didn't play together on the pitch.
Oh, and we mentioned their Milan not being in Europe. Do you reckon Carlos Bacca will stay there? Potentially. I mean, they can still qualify for
if
Europe.
If they win the
Coppa Italia, but... He's been great this season. I mean, one of the few shining lights for the Rossoneri.
Well, exactly. I just wonder if it's because it's Milan, you might give them another season. But, people may have seen the stuff for, is it Brocchi, who allegedly in the dressing room was...
he flipped out at them, wasn't he?
Yeah, just said, look, I mean, I'm not sure we can broadcast it, actually, but let's just say he wasn't happy with the effort that they put in. So I wonder if he... As it's AC Milan, if you stay another season. But again, if you want a striker and you want a goal scorer...
There's some out there, aren't there?
There are.
You say they're rare, but there are.
Icardi, Inter aren't in the Champions League. You know, there are players there. You don't have to go for Higuain or someone who, A, might not be for sale, or B, will cost you a fortune.
Yeah, and he's not the youngest. Either.
No. But this is Premier League club, so they probably will.
Yeah, exactly. Chris, I think we're done. So next week, your team of the season... Yeah, we did our team of the season at the halfway point.
This is going to be hard. Do we have subs?
No.
No, just 11.
Just 11,
and
yeah.
A coach.
You can have a coach.
Ooh.
Mm.
I know who mine is.
Do you? Who is it?
I was going to say that.
Oh, no, we'll save it. Let's save it.
Does the coach have to... How lifelike are
we? Is it Roberto Martinez?
No, it's Brendan Rodgers, you silly. No, but I was going to say, does the coach have to play the type of football that your 11 plays.
No, Chris, he just has to have done a good thing.
Am I overthinking it?
Yeah, well, last that you said that. You said you built a team that could...
Yeah, I built a team who would win games.
Yeah, you got a football manager on it.
Yeah, I did really get football manager on it. Okay, just the 11 players and the
best
coach.
And we want people's outstanding players. And we'll try and get, you know, the guys we have on the show, we'll ask them for their player of the season from respective leagues. I mean, our teams are going to have respective bias because I think we both probably cover Bundesliga most.
Yeah.
Out of the European leagues.
Choose anyone from the Russian Premier League.
No. Ahmed Musa's been good. I reckon Leicester will be back in for him as they were in January.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
So we're done. Tweet us your players of the year, or maybe the best new player, a player who's really come to the fore this season, at FIE Podcast. And please... I'll leave that in. And please leave us a review on iTunes. Thank you very much.
This is Football in Europe.